Richie and John, we're here to surprise. Freedom and pride, we're living out loud, celebrating our community with a vibrant crowd. Freedom and equality, let it be clear. Being who you are, a fun, frisky, and out loud queer. From Mutual Broadcasting, we're breaking free. Living our truth, just you listen and see.
From the Mutual Broadcasting Systems United America Network, this is the voice of LGBTQ plus news and life-focused content. The Richie and John podcast, no bullshit, just reality for the community and allies around the globe. Here are your hosts, infinitely wiser, smarter and kinder than everyone in the Trump administration, combined. Definitely uncensored, even if they are not uncut. Richie Roy and John McMullen, give them hell, boys.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Richie and John. We took a little hiatus. We have been making sort of big plans. Our Richie and John official HQ in Palm Springs has moved to a new studio, which is still sort of in the works. Yes. That's a sort of a big new change. And we've taken a little breather, and we are back with Newsday Tuesday, of course. And a lot of great stuff coming at you this summer and beyond. I am here, of course, with our good friend and co-host, John. John, how you doing?
I'm good. Thank you. It's been a challenging couple of months, actually. In the last week, had eye surgery. And you've been traveling a lot, and we've just had a lot of stuff going on during this hiatus period. But now that we're back in the thick of Pride season, and we've had more than 100 days of the dildo in Washington doing his damage, we had to get back here sooner than later.
We did. Yeah, there's a lot to cover. Yeah, it's Pride season. You know, there's crazy stuff going on right now. Stuff that we like to cover LGBTQ news. That is our focus. There's a lot of other stuff going on right now and crazy stuff, whether it's in Los Angeles or tanks being transported by rail into DC for our glorious leader's birthday parade. And there's all kinds of dumb stuff happening. But we have some stories here, some sobering, some exciting and happy. We always try to run the gamut. So with that, I'd like to start out with a fun story and a story of, actually it's two related stories, of folks standing up for our trans brothers and sisters and friends. So Simone Biles, who, if you have been living under a rock for the past decade or so, is basically like the most celebrated Olympian ever. She's incredible. She has moves named after her that no one else can do. And she recently on social media clapped back pretty strongly at Riley Gaines. For those of you who don't know who Riley Gaines is, this is the athlete who tied for fifth in a collegiate sport with a trans person. Since that time, since tying for fifth, did not lose, tied for fifth with a trans athlete, Riley Gaines has been riding the anti-trans gravy train from here to Timbuktu. On Fox News, you name it, on social media, and it's become kind of J.K. Rowling, just like the sort of the darling poster child of a woman who has been aggrieved by trans athletes. It's just so stupid. But Simone Biles, again, 7-time Olympic champion, stood up for transgender athletes. In a post on Twitter, Biles criticized Riley Gaines for her ongoing harassment of trans girls and women, saying, "You're truly sick. All of this campaigning because you lost a race," Biles stated and went on, urging Gaines to uplift the trans community instead of bullying them. Biles also talked about whether there were other ways to promote equity in athletics, to have an inclusive space for trans athletes, and emphasized that no sport is safe when bullying is present, like Riley Gaines has been doing to trans athletes for a while now. Despite Gaines's disappointment in Biles's remarks, the gymnast is an unwavering ally to her teammates, competitors, and the LGBTQ community. And it just, I saw a lot of posts retweeting and just being like, just a reminder, Simone Biles is the GOAT. She is the greatest of all time. Like, she is out there doing the thing. And it was just nice to see in this moment where, again, we're seeing at the highest levels from the president to the Congress, and the New York Times has been doing some pretty shoddy coverage or reporting in quotes on trans gender affirming care. That our community is being assaulted on all sides, that someone like Simone Biles just stands up and says, look, Riley, you're a loser. You're a loser, and you're a sore loser at that. So that was a nice thing to see.
Yeah, I only have one thing to say about it, and that is, Riley Gaines, shut the fuck up. We're tired of you.
Yeah, like Riley Gaines is like the Hawk Tua of sports. It's like your 15 minutes are way over. Just disappear.
You're not even a medalist. So just shut up.
Yeah. So that was good. And then we had another pretty big deal person come out strongly in support of our trans community. John, who was that?
I got to tell you, Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, he's a superstar, and I wasn't so sure about that when Kamala picked him as her running mate, because there were some really good choices. I honestly had thought that she might have selected the former astronaut from Arizona, the senator who is married, of course, to Gabby Giffords. Mark Kelly. But I have to tell you, this guy, in every sense of the word, is a hero and a queero. He's exactly the kind of guy that you wish was your high school teacher. He is the guy who you wish was your football coach if you played in sports. He is a first-class human being, and I had the opportunity to be in his presence when he made news about 2 weeks ago in Anaheim, California. Governor Walz delivered a powerful message at the California Democratic Convention, where I had the privilege of attending, and he criticized fellow Democrats for abandoning the transgender community. He stated, "Shame on any of us who throws a trans child under the bus for thinking that they're going to get elected." He emphasized the need for the party to prioritize human dignity. Imagine that. In this day and age, Walz argued that Democrats can champion both a strong economy and basic human rights, rejecting claims that support trans rights harms the party's image. He mentioned that issues like inflation and healthcare, not gender identity, are what the voters truly care about. And despite some Democrats wavering on trans issues amid electoral losses, Walz insisted that the party must engage in these discussions rather than retreat. He declared, "Losing an election doesn't mean that you have the right to retreat from a fight," urging Democrats to stand firm in their commitment to diversity and equity. And I have to tell you, being in that audience that day, probably about 3,000 people who were there in the hall at the Anaheim Convention Center, it was as great to hear it come from him as it was to hear the thunderous applause that came from that audience that was there, because there are a lot of people within the party who have taken this stance that we lost all of this because we stood there by the transgender community, and that's a bunch of crap. And it was really nice to see that there were people who were in support of this notion at that convention. Who wasn't at that convention, by the way? Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom, the sitting governor of the state of California, was not at the state Democratic convention. And he, of course, was the one who went on the first episode of his podcast a few months ago, if you'll recall, and used the transgender scapegoating crap in that conversation that he had
with Charlie Kirk. Yeah. And he tried to break bread with Charlie Kirk by saying, it's a complicated issue. And these trans athletes, I don't know about all this.
Yeah.
Good for Tim Walz.
I have to tell you, this guy is the salt of the earth. And everything we saw on television, and I saw it with my own two eyes in that room, it makes you so proud to know that there are leaders in America, and even those who are approaching their 60s and 70s who have that kind of an attitude today in this country. Hooray for Tim Walz, and I while he probably will not be running for federal office again, I would not be surprised to see them using him as definitely as somebody who's going to be a surrogate in future campaigns, because he's a real champion for the causes that mean something to us.
Yeah, it's like the sort of the true definition of he's a mensch. He is an absolute mensch. Just a great, like you said, salt of the earth human. The kind of, in some ways, almost this kind of archetypal Democrat, right? Because someone who's clearly ticks all these boxes, red-blooded American, does all the American things, looks like a dad, is a dad, acts like a dad, teacher, cares about people who are marginalized, has a sort of goofy sense of humor. I really like him, and I like that in this moment that he is sticking to his guns on this issue, because we are seeing, I think in a very depressing way, a certain kind of realpolitik tranche of Democratic operatives who have decided that it was the trans issue that was determinative, and that maybe there is daylight there, or maybe there's something there, and that maybe it would be good to just not deal with that issue. Or maybe it's giving it that kind of, and the New York Times again is doing this too, this sort of, maybe there's something to this critique. Which there's not. It's bullshit. And frankly, if you really want to, the idea is that you can pinpoint any one thing as to why the election went the way it did is dumb, because first of all, we don't even know the election actually went the way it, quote, that it did. So yes. Let's just start with that.
Yeah.
And even assuming that there wasn't massive fraud or shenanigans or machinations or whatever, we still don't know. It's all this guesstimating and armchair quarterbacking and this kind of James Carvelling, which I just get so tired of, because at the end of the day, you can't trade away human rights. And I think Tim Walz is correct to me. He's just calling that out, being like, no, like, we probably didn't lose because of this. And even if we did, that doesn't mean that we're just going to throw away humans for expediency. So yeah, I'm so glad that he did that.
I have to tell you, that was not the only significant thing that happened at that convention. And we'll spend more time on it on another episode. But there were a couple of other headline stories, I think, that emerged from that convention. One was that we saw some very fiery things come out of Senator California, United States Senator Adam Schiff's mouth at that event. Mm. The other thing was that there was a presentation, one of the guest speakers, and he set that place on fire, was New Jersey United States Senator Cory Booker. And I think I was probably the first person in the nation in the media at the Fleet Center in Boston in 2004 to say on national radio that night when it happened, that speech you just heard, that's a future president of the United States of America. And that was when Barack Obama delivered that incredible address mm-hmm. for the crowd that was there to nominate John Kerry that year. But I heard something even more powerful at this event when Cory Booker spoke. And I believe that he has a very good chance of being our nominee for the Democrats in our next election cycle in 2028. I would not be surprised at all to see him running for and possibly become the next president of the United States. I think we're going to have a lot of stuff to talk about as a result of it, and certainly some interesting guests who will be joining us on this program in future weeks and months as we start the march towards the midterms. But Tim Walz, total superstar.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to go from Tim Walz to a different branch of government, a branch that is really in the spotlight right now, the judicial branch, for many reasons. One of the main reasons is it is the kind of thin reed at this moment, keeping us from just complete despotism and authoritarianism like today. Whether that'll last another week or two, we'll keep you posted. But the judiciary has been in the news a lot because a lot of Trump and Musk's crazy things that they are doing have been correctly halted at the judicial level, at the district court, and even at appellate levels. Supreme Court has been a little 50-50. But the Supreme Court recently unanimously ruled in favor of an anti-straight discrimination claim. Anti-straight. So,
anti-straight.
In a landmark decision, the Supreme Court unanimously ruled in favor of Marlene Ames, an Ohio woman alleging workplace discrimination for being heterosexual. The court found that members of majority groups should not face a higher burden of proof than minority groups when claiming discrimination. Ames sued the Ohio Department of Youth Services after being passed over for promotions in favor of gay candidates. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson emphasized that Title VII protects individuals from discrimination regardless of their group status, stating that Congress did not intend to impose different standards on majority group plaintiffs. The Ohio Solicitor General argued that Ames could not prove anti-straight bias, but the ruling allows her to return to the lower courts and seek justice under the new, revised, and lower standard. Ames had worked for 20 years at the Ohio Department of Youth Services and faced a demotion after a new supervisor was appointed. The ruling could pave the way for more lawsuits by majority group plaintiffs in the future. So this one is, it was a unanimous court. This wasn't the sort of ideological split that we've seen in a lot of these important cases. But I think that this probably, I understand why it made theoretical sense, this idea that discrimination is discrimination no matter what. But in reality, what we're seeing with this administration, with the new way that the right is weaponizing things in every way they can, is that then we're going to see a spate of lawsuits if someone gay gets a job and someone straight doesn't get the job. Someone gets a promotion and they're gay and the straight person didn't get it. This now gives, at least opens the door to frivolous lawsuits that that are burdensome and expensive and annoying. And there will be settlements. It will be big wastes of time and money for majority member white people to say that they were discriminated against in a promotion because of their whiteness or because of their straightness. And we're seeing, and the thing is, if you look at what the current administration is doing, they've already, in a lot of instances, telegraphed pretty directly to people that this is what they should do. For instance, in the employment area, the EEOC, which previously was really there to protect folks from marginalized and minority communities against majoritarian prejudice, has put out press releases and sort of white papers saying, here's how you can sue if you think that DEI practices led to you being discriminated against in hiring or in employment or in promotions or in anything employment related. So they're turning it on its head so that basically people who are in majority groups, like white folks or straight folks, can use the same mechanisms to try to harass employers. And we're going to see a lot of this. We're going to see a lot of this going forward, is that if a person of color gets a job, a white person at this is the EEOC is saying you should probably sue them. And same here, if a straight person gets passed over for a promotion over a gay person, they have every impetus to sue and force them to prove that it wasn't because of straight animus. Again, the supervisor in this particular case was straight. So it's just lunacy. And again, I know that I can see why probably for just pure theory reasons, the liberals on the court went in a unanimous direction on this decision. But in a realpolitik kind of practical sense, this is opening the floodgates to nuisance litigation until the cows come home.
Yeah. Well, all I can say is that I better never find out that Ms. Ames has been a carpet muncher. In a surprising turn, the city of Missoula has found a way to bypass Montana's statewide ban on pride flags. I love this. This was such great creative thinking. The story is one of the most delicious ones that we're coming back with this season. It turns out that they declared the rainbow flag as the official city flag. At any rate, Governor Greg Gianforte and state Republicans expressed outrage at this clever maneuver, pledging to amend the law to prevent Missoula from flying what they labeled as a divisive flag. On Monday, the Missoula City Council voted 9-2 to recognize the Pride flag as the sole official flag, a decision that was aimed at countering House Bill 819, which restricts flags reflecting political ideologies or identities on government property. However, the law permits the Confederate flag, raising questions about its intent. That's insane. Councilmember Jennifer Savage emphasized the importance of the flag for her queer daughter. Forte criticized the council for prioritizing the flag over local issues. The situation reflects a broader trend, as other cities, including those in Utah and Idaho, have also adopted similar strategies to fly pride flags despite state restrictions. And we're going to talk about some of those other places where the flag has definitely, on one side or the other, got people flapping in the wind.
Yeah. I know, for instance, Utah and Idaho are two good. I know Salt Lake and Boise, they took like the pride and trans flags and put some of the emblems of the city flags onto those flags and deemed them to be official flags to get around this sort of stupid ban, pride flag ban, which I think I love the cleverness of all of this.
At its core, this is yet another freedom of speech thing.
We've talked about this kind of stuff we've talked about for quite a while is cloaking very clearly anti-LGBTQ animus in a neutral language, basically saying things like, we're no longer going to allow, let's say, jerseys, warm-up jerseys. We're no longer going to allow any warm-up jerseys except for the normal ones, except we will allow the breast cancer and the military ones, which were the only two except for the pride one that they even did. So It's like they come up with these things that they don't want to say we are excluding gay people.
Yeah.
Specifically
them out, but all
so instead they couch it in this vague way that really only applies to pride flags. And so I love this creativity. And like you said, it is part and parcel of, I think a lot of people are really starting to see the writing on the wall with this administration that for being classically Republicans or people on the right are about personal liberty, freedom of expression and speech, freedom of lots of things. Sometimes freedoms that seem too free, like freedom to just amass weapons of murder and then mow people down. But we'll talk about that a different time. But they're like pro-freedom, right? Except the current version, the MAGA version, is really about authoritarianism. And freedom of expression is not interesting to them if what you're expressing isn't towing the line of what they want. And so what we're seeing, though, is I think people are getting tired of it because cities across America are openly defying Republican-led efforts and the presidential administration by proudly raising pride flags for June. Hawaii was one example where Governor Josh Green led a historic first-time pride flag raising at the state capitol, calling it a reflection of inclusion. California Governor Gavin Newsom also ordered the pride flag flown for the first time, which actually, that's surprising to me. But
it
over
surprised
the
me
state
too,
capitol,
but I thought maybe this is him trying to make up for his big fuck-up on that podcast.
Yeah, exactly. And in Florida, this is a fun, I love this story. And
we're going to talk about this story in more detail because we're going to have a special guest who's going to join us from there. But go ahead.
Yes, we are going to do this one in more detail. But Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida directed that a bridge in Jacksonville should only display red, white, and blue lights instead of rainbow colors during this month. I think he said something along the lines of, the only colors we recognize are red, white, and blue. The residents staged their own pride tribute and made their message clear that rainbow is here to stay, whether you like it or not. And then from Boston to Salt Lake, Missoula to Cincinnati, communities nationwide are rejecting GOP attempts to erase pride visibility. We have more stories on that coming. Even in Texas, the Dallas City Council voted to raise the Pride flag alongside Juneteenth banners. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson sent the strongest message, declaring at Daily Plaza that the city firmly rejects any attempt at silencing LGBTQ voices. Yeah, the flag, we've talked about this before too. The flag does matter, and people are using the flags to, in this month, to send that message. It's like the most, it's the most inclusive and subtle fuck you that you can really do in this month. Because it's just, hey, we're just throwing a rainbow flag up.
But just trying to give you, by the way, something to say God bless America for.
But yeah, so we've got some glimmers of hope here in our Pride Month, which should it be called Pride Month at all? John, should we even call it Pride Month? Should we call it something else? What should we call it?
Just call it Queer Month.
So I think that at least one GOP lawmaker in Illinois has a different idea. What about that, John?
She is so batshit crazy. I don't even know. Let's see where to start with this. Okay. So Illinois Republican Congresswoman Mary Miller has introduced a resolution to designate June as Family Month. Family Month, not Pride Month, Family Month, openly challenging Pride celebrations. Miller's proposal claims that Pride Month, first declared by President Clinton in 1999 and recognized by Presidents Obama and Biden, undermines traditional marriage and family structures. Supported by anti-LGBT groups, Miller tells conservative media that her resolution rejects what she calls a radical leftist agenda aimed at redefining marriage and confusing children. Oh, those poor children. Miller previously introduced legislation targeting transgender rights, including bathroom restrictions and redefining womanhood to exclude transgender individuals. She voted last year against recognizing same-sex marriage and has drawn controversy for referring to abortion bans as victories for white life. Critics say that her resolution and rhetoric marginalize LGBTQ plus Americans, while she maintains her efforts to defend what she describes as God's timeless design. And boy, does she have in with the Almighty. We'll get to that in a moment. President Trump has not issued a proclamation recognizing Pride Month this year, of course. Why would he do that?
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, this is just a stunt by a crazy woman, but I want to go back to something that she said, this idea that LGBTQ recognition, like Pride Month, is part of a radical leftist agenda aimed at redefining marriage and confusing children. Who's redefining marriage and confusing children right now? The Republicans, because when you ICE snatches up someone's wife when she's at work and deports her, leaving her 12-year-old child on the street alone, that's confusing children and redefining marriage, because you're ripping families apart and leaving children sometimes orphaned or even deporting U.S. citizen children without due process at all. I don't think that the radical leftists who just want to acknowledge other types of families are the ones who are redefining marriage or confusing children right now. To be honest.
And by the way, if we want to throw her in prison for being a bad American, here's one more example that is evidence of the fact that she is batshit fucking crazy. She also dismisses climate change as a liberal hoax. Her recent comments claimed that climate change is fake because, quote, and remember, she's very close to the Almighty now. God controls the sun, and the sun primarily controls the weather.
That is just, wow. That is, I'm going to get that tattooed on me somewhere. Wow. Wow. That is just too much.
Reminds me of a Neil Diamond song, something about you are the sun, I am the moon. Forget it.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. But yeah, they'll say whatever and do whatever. It's just, I'm always struck by just the know-nothingness of some of these people who just, the tendency to just say things in that world, in that Republican MAGA world, is wild.
Can we not require, going forward, it's not going to happen right now, like when the Smart Party actually gets back in power again, I really hope that we can pass a law that requires that you must pass some sort of a test to be able to be running for elective office. You can't just generally be dumber than a fucking box of rocks.
Yeah, it would be nice. Yeah, there are some Crayola boxes missing a bunch of crayons in Congress right now, because they're munching on crayons and sniffing glue, and I don't know what they're up to. Yeah. But yeah, it's wild. But speaking of Pride Month,
thing, by the way, that June is such a, who would have ever thought? I always, as a kid growing up, June to me was Freedom Month. It was the month that we got out of school for a few months to enjoy a little break and the summer weather and all that. Now these nut jobs want to rename it Title IX Month.
Yeah. So this is, again, part of a broader move in many ways to weaponize the Department of Education. First of all, to destroy the Department of Education, but on the way out to weaponize it, to beat up higher ed, because, again, J.D. Vance said the quiet thing out loud several years ago, that higher education is the enemy. Everything you see, whether it's Columbia or Harvard or grants, in every possible way, cancellation of foreign student visas or visa interviews, they're trying to basically make it almost untenable for higher education to exist in this country. Because why? Because people who are educated and learn about the world amongst a diverse and interesting group of people from domestically and internationally tend to, believe it or not, find that what the Republicans are selling is a bunch of crap. And so why don't we just get rid of all of these dens of iniquity and let people work in the salt mine for Elon forever?
By the way, this would be a really good opportunity for me to point out that if you've ever wanted to be a co-host on this program, it would be a good time for you to send your applications in to richieandjohn.com. And the reason I mention that is because both of those institutions of higher learning that Mr. Roy just mentioned a moment ago, he holds sheepskin from both of them, both Columbia and Harvard, which means he's probably headed for a vacation for a long time in El Salvador soon.
Yeah, probably. In the meantime, while I'm still here, I will tell you about what the Department of Education has been up to. They are renaming this month Title IX Month in what critics call an attack on LGBTQ equality. Traditionally celebrated as Pride Month, because it's Pride Month, June is instead marked by the department to honor Title IX's 53rd, of course that's an august number, anniversary. Title IX prohibits sex discrimination in education, and the administration has been using it to investigate trans student inclusion. Education Secretary Linda McMahon, who doesn't know anything that isn't handed to her on a card, if you watched any of the hearings that happened recently where she was hauled in front of Congress to answer basic questions, and there was a very nice looking woman sitting next to her with a stack of index cards, who was writing on a card, and each question she'd write on a card and hand it to Linda McMahon, and Linda McMahon would read the card. And at one point, I forget who was questioning her, called her out and said, "Don't look at the cards." And Linda McMahon was flummoxed because she didn't know even basic questions about anything. Anyway, our know-nothing secretary, Linda McMahon, says that the administration aims to protect women's sports and gender-segregated spaces, explicitly excluding trans women from sororities and dormitories. The department announced this past week that it's investigating the University of Wyoming for allowing a trans woman into a sorority, warning the university could lose federal funding. Earlier this week, it also targeted Colorado's Jefferson County schools for policies permitting trans students to share accommodations aligned with their gender identity. LGBTQ advocates condemn these moves, calling them discriminatory and harmful to trans students' rights and safety. And we've seen this weaponizing of Title IX from the earliest days of this second Trump administration, when they declared that there was no such thing as gender. It was only sex. And sex was male or female as determined at birth. And if you look at it, the way that they defined that was actually weird and fucked up. But in any case, gender doesn't exist to them. It's only sex. And because of that, Title IX, which under Biden's rules had been expanded to include trans identity as being part of Title IX's protections and something that you could seek Title IX sort of grievance over if someone mistreated you because of your trans identity. That's gone. They took that out. And now they're saying that any kind of trans inclusivity is violative of Title IX because it violates the sort of women, biological women, on the basis of their sex. So they're weaponizing something that was meant to be protective, which is one of their things they're doing now. And yeah, they're naming June Title IX month to send the message that trans folks are not welcome, that gay folks aren't welcome. And the idea that this administration, that MAGA is truly protective of women, is laughable on its face. When you look at what they're doing across the board, whether it's at the Library of Congress or the National Portrait Museum, especially in the military, women in power are being fired left and right. We don't have any women, you know, what I think is it 3-star generals anymore. They're all gone, and they're not only renaming vessels like the Harvey Milk, but they're looking at things like Harriet Tubman. The idea that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the idea that this administration is protective of women, this is Margaret Atwood. This is Handmaid's Tale, that in the way that Gilead was protective of women. It's laughable on its face. So the idea that they're using Title IX as this kind of thumb in the eye of everyone is so gross, and they know what they're doing. So,
yeah. Wow. We're back.
We are back. And I poured a little glass of champagne to celebrate the return of Richie and John, because I have missed the show. I've missed bringing the news and, of course, our Saturday, substantial Saturday deeper dives to everyone. And we look forward to continuing to cover things. We would love to hear from you. John, what's the best way for people to reach us right now?
The best way to reach us is to send us an email, honestly, and that is to, I think it's info@richieandjohn.com, and that'll get to both of us, and we'll have an opportunity to see it. We're in the process of setting up some new systems that all are going to be rolling out. We'd hoped by the time we came back that we were going to have the new studio all built and everything in place, but it's in process, and in the next couple of weeks, you will see us from there, which I'm excited about, very excited about. It's been a kind of a long and drawn out process, not helped by my own health issues, but we're moving forward again. So look forward to being able to offer you more ways to stay in touch with us and to communicate what you think about what's going on in the world around us, and to let us know also if there's something that you're seeing. This needs to be an eyewitness news as well. So if you see stuff going on that you think we should know about, please don't hesitate to drop us a line. It doesn't have to be published somewhere else for us to talk about it.
Absolutely. And I will say too, if you're a new listener to the show, first of all, welcome. I hope that you have enjoyed it. And if you are someone who has listened for a while, we're really, it's Pride Month, and we're also in a really dark and scary time for our community and for many other communities. We really want to get the show out there. So if you're a regular listener, what we would love for you to do is tell your friends about the show. Make a post on Facebook or on Instagram or your social media of choice. Tell a friend directly if you think they're a podcast listener. We would love for you to just get the word out as best as you can.
And if you're an ambassador for us, don't hesitate to let us know. Drop us a line about that with an address, because we'd love to send you some Richie and John swag.
Absolutely. So we're glad to be back. We will be back at you this coming Saturday. Until then, feel free to drop us a line, and hope you have a great week.
Indeed.
Bye.
Richie and John is a production of the United America Network, a division of the Mutual Broadcasting System. Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and their guests. If you have a problem with it, bugger off.
Freedom and equality, let it be clear. Being who you are, a fun, frisky, and out loud queer. From Mutual Broadcasting, we're breaking free. Living our truth, just you listen and see. Oh, 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 oh. truth, just you listen and see.